It's time for Mac Break Weekly. I'm back, baby. Andy and Anako and Renee Richie are here, too. We'll talk about Samsung, the story of the Note 7, Samsung's arguments in the Supreme Court versus Apple today, and what to expect of an imaginary, maybe possible, maybe real Apple.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 528, recorded Tuesday, October 11th, 2016. The passive-aggressive update. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Tracker. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. Pair Tracker to your smartphone, attach it to any item, and find its precise location with a tap of a button. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code MACBREAK for 30% off your entire order. And by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/twit. And by the Ring video doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/MacBreak and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit with this limited time offer. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. Yes, I'm back. I'm so glad to be back. I've been having imaginary conversations with Andy Anako and Renee Richie for the last 3 weeks. Now I can have actual conversations. There he is, Andy Anako of the Chicago Sun-Times. Thank you for filling in for me. Oh, we have a little mouse on your face there. Can we just brush that off? Thank you. And then, not your fault, Andy. And then on my right, in the pink trunks, it's Renee Richie. I'm sorry, the pink watch band. It's Renee Richie from imore.com. I'm getting your watch band mania, I'm afraid. Yeah. You're is that Hermes? You're muted, Renee. I don't know what's going on. Is it us or is it him? Help me, let me out. Con! Are you seeing meter movement on the pot?
There we go. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. Probably my end. I'm probably incredibly bad at this podcasting thing.
I can't imagine how. How many a week do you do now?
No, I'm cutting down, Leo. I'm cutting down.
Well, thank you for not cutting down on us, because we had Renee on Twit on Sunday. It was great to have you. Thank you.
So much fun.
Emergency. I said, you know, Renee's always working. Why don't you give him a ring? And I was thrilled.
Because it's true.
Well, it was a great show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
So, yeah, I am. Because I got the white watch, so I thought, well, that'll work with any watch band. So,
yeah.
My heart rate monitor stopped working this morning, but I turned the watch off and on, and that fixed it. Is that a tip?
Yeah, I saw. No, but I saw somebody with the white watch, and I saw them on several days. I forget where. I think it was in New York City. And every day they had a different band that matched their plaid shirts.
Yes, you can do that now. Yeah. Look at, see how I've
kind of... It was a nylon band, so it wasn't so expensive, but they could really match every shirt.
I've done that. I've got the... I think that's kind of color coordinated.
It's fetching.
And the white is neutral, so... Yeah. I'm sorry, Randy.
And the black Milanese.
No.
We could talk men's fashions and industrializations all day, Leo.
I know we could. I know we could. you guys have been talking, and thank you for filling in for me. You guys have been talking a lot, of course, about all of the things that happened while I was gone. The release of the iPhone. People got their iPhones. I got it the day I left, which was great. I was able to take an iPhone 7 Plus with me. And I was thrilled because most of my best pictures are not from the Leica Q that I brought as well, the fancy, expensive camera, but from the phone. That's telling.
Yeah, it's a scene, man. I was at New York Comic Con last week, and so I was impressed enough with the quality of the camera that I was kind of using it as my B camera. I had my beloved Olympus EM1. And was taking great shots because I had a really good lens and I had a really good flash. But there were so many times where you could just get really nice results with just that that iPhone. Some of the best ones were just that and like a little $75 LED, the Loom Cube light. just getting some beautiful shots. I had to keep reminding people on Instagram that no, this is unedited. Nope, I didn't. I'm not even running the beta, so I don't get the fake bokeh effect. So yeah,
pretty impressive. Yeah, pretty darn impressive, I must say. The color and the clarity are really superb, and it was very handy. Let me pull up some pictures
Zoom. We shot with a Mark, a 5D Mark III for everything on iMore up until the iPhone 7 came out, and we haven't used it since. It's all been iPhone 7.
Is it really that much better?
The biggest problem we had is that if it was anything but great sunlight, we had to go back to a big camera because the iPhone didn't handle low light well.
It does so well in highlight. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And you still can't go really, really low light, but it gives you, you can shoot through a much larger period of the day than you could before. And that's incredibly helpful when you do it for a living.
Yeah.
You have to make sure that you know the difference between shooting stuff that's going to be on the web, whether it's like a website or for Instagram, and stuff where you're going to go into Lightroom and then take a look at it really, really close. I did a little bit of testing on Sunday, meaning in the sense where I'm taking pictures with two different phone cameras and my Olympus, just so that when I get home, I can see really what the difference between all the three of them. And it really does fall. I wouldn't say it doesn't fall apart, but you can definitely see the difference on your Mac screen that you could not see on the screen of the phone or the screen of the camera.
If you pixel peep, in other words, if you go, you really. Here's an example though of where the zoom is handy. So here, this is Notre Dame low light, a picture of a wood carving. That's the regular 28 millimeters lens, and then that's without any movement of on my part the 56 millimeter the zoom lens. And it's really nice to have that. By the way, a horrific scene. This is the slaughter of the innocents. But the difference is very handy. Now, of course, it's still
so
a camera.
Well,
it's still a camera phone. I'm not gainsaying that. But I also noticed that my Leica required considerably more attention after the fact, right? I have to go in there and white balance and the stuff comes out of the iPhone. If you're posting, let's put it this way. If you're posting a Facebook or Instagram, it's fine, right? It's as good as you need it to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Again, it's like Renee said, in bright sunlight, there are very few high-level smartphone cameras that don't do an excellent job. I do think the iPhone 7 does a much better job than most of them. It's even when it's overcast, like it was rainy on Sunday morning, and so I'm walking around New York taking pictures, and that's even at that level, when you get to the, when you try to look at it as, is this something that 15 years from now, I'm going to be making a print of this and hanging it on the wall or putting it above my sofa. That's the level at which you see the difference between a phone camera and a quote real camera, even a cheap real camera. But for a lot of people, that's not going to be really important. And of course, this is the phone that you'll have with you all the time.
Here's an example of the HDR. Again, this is in a very dimly lit church, but it's able to really pick up.
It lets us get shots that we couldn't get with previous generation hardware, which to me is a huge difference.
Yeah, so I was pleased. I mean, that is probably the only massive difference between the iPhone 6S Plus and the iPhone 7 Plus. The headphone jack, that's a negative
difference.
It depends
how clumsy you are, because if you drop it in water, it's a good...
It's waterproof. It's faster, although, again, I point out nobody really has complained about the 6S being slow.
The portrait mode, when you... Like, the portrait mode can peg the A10 processor.
Okay,
which is impressive because it's doing the custom disk blur live, so you can see it while you're taking the photo.
Right,
and I just want to stop for a second to say, like that little animation when it moves between 1x and 2x, or when it does the depth of field effect, they did a really good job of that because you're cutting between two different lenses and you're picking the best lighting for the viewfinder, and you have to give people an approximation.
Oh, it does
of
zoom,
what
doesn't
seeing.
It? Yeah,
yeah, it goes kind of like a bloop. Like
I never noticed
it's kind of a little bit of acceleration in it.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool. Now, portrait mode is not out in general to the general public yet. It's still the beta for 10.2.
Yes.
When is 10.1. That? That's supposed to be this month, right?
Yeah, 10.1 is supposed to come out 10.1. At some point this month. Yeah.
Okay. So we should be looking for that. And I at least
maybe to coincide with the AirPods. That would be a good guess.
Oh, good guess. And when will we see the AirPods?
Late October.
You're liking those?
Yes, they're fantastic.
Sometime in the next 10 to 20 days.
Yeah.
Before Halloween.
You don't notice how much a difference not having the cord pulling at your ear is until you're out walking all the time and shooting all the time and, you know, just even doing anything. It's just they stay in where the corded ones always pulled out.
Yeah, I mean, really, I have to say, I bought four more headphone adapters just because I have them. But I do miss having a headphone jack. So I guess this is Apple really pushing us to a wireless future.
And in my test, people can't tell the difference when I'm on them and when I'm on the phone. And they sometimes get it wrong. They're like, I'm on the phone. And like, could you please get off the headset? And I'm on the headset.
Oh, that's interesting.
The noise canceling is the beamforming and the noise canceling is really well done.
That might be my Halloween costume. I might be an AirPod for Halloween.
You should be a disgruntled phone owner who is still upset about the lack of the headphone jack.
Am I really holding on? Is it just hold for me, just holding on to the past to say I wish I had a headphone jack?
No, I mean, there are going to be annoyances that you're going to have to...
On the plane, for instance, I wanted to listen on a 10-hour flight, and I didn't want to kill my battery. I wanted to arrive with some battery, so I didn't have that as an option because I couldn't charge and listen, as an example, right?
Yeah. I keep comparing it to like when Gary Berghoff left the cast of MASH. It's not a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a change that happened. There are things you're going to miss. There are new things that you're going to take advantage of.
Are you saying the headphone jack is Radar O'Reilly?
Yes. I'm waiting.
But you got Klinger.
Yeah. See, the thing is, though, I am talking about like
the AirPods are Klinger.
I've done one thing at a time. I do it very, very well, and then I move on. Apple is Charles Emerson Winchester III.
Yes. Wow. Anybody who wasn't a MASH fan is completely at sea.
Exactly. That's a 35-year-old cultural reference. Thanks, guys.
I find I'm making more and more of those, Andy. Welcome to the club. By the way, your costume at Comic-Con was awesome. We talked about that on Saturday on the new Screensavers.
There you go. Yeah. fewer than two people recognized it. That is to say, zero people recognized that I was dressed as Bill Cunningham, fashion photographer of the New York Times. But I was pleasing myself, and that was pretty much the thing. The sad thing was I actually had a second costume ready for the second day, but instead of spending 4 days at the con because of work, I wound up spending just 2 days at the con. And on Sunday, I'm like, I really don't have mental bandwidth and time to do a second costume. So, oh well, I'll save it for another surprise.
Was the blue jacket the key? Was that how we should have recognized the character?
You should have. It's basically there's the blue French dustman's jacket is the signature part of it. Although I did watch.
Where did you get that, by the way?
I wanted to get a real one, but now they're like actual like kind of fashion items. Can't get them for less than like $50 or $60 or $70 on eBay. So I actually just went to a uniform shop, and you can find the sort of like coat that a bus person would wear at a restaurant, and they're available in 18 colors. And okay, get the blue one. And the set, you know what the sad thing is? It's actually of all like the coats or like blazers I've ever bought, it's the one that fits me the best ever. Like the sleeves
Isn't
are right,
funny?
The buttons are right, the collar's
jacket.
Right. It's like. Yeah, I almost want to like take it to my tail and say, could you sew a lining into this and some and an inside pocket?
Wow.
So yeah, so I just realized that, hey, when I go to Comic-Con, I am also walking around asking strangers whose clothes I like if I could take their picture. So there you go. It works.
It's the French workwear revolution, apparently, according to the Financial Times. Everybody's wearing them. I don't know. That is as far afield as we've ever gotten. And I know you, again, I'm just, because I haven't had a chance to talk about the iPhone 7, I'm just bringing it up. And I've, you know, actually wore the Apple Watch the whole trip. Didn't get my Series 2 till I got home, but I found, you know, as I've said before, traveling, it's very handy to have the watch for a variety of reasons. And I've been wearing it as an exercise watch since I got back, and it's good. It's nice.
You get a new watch, you just want to do it. You just want to fill those rings.
Oh, look at you! You are just showing off now.
No, but you can't. Because of the new sharing feature, I am not intrinsically motivated. I just, if it's left to me, I'd be like, I could sit here and write and watch TV and just not have to do anything. Or I could go, no, I'm not going for it. But now I see Serenity, or I see another one of my friends pop up, workout complete, close the, and I'm like, no, I will not let them win. And then I have to go out there and do it. And it's proved hugely motivational for me.
So how do you share it? I have to do that.
Yeah, so you go to the activities app, and then there's a button for sharing.
I'm going to share my activities. But this is why I was so angry that the heart rate monitor stopped working today, because I didn't get credit.
Yes.
For my half hour on the treadmill, my half hour on the rowing machine, zero credit. It says you still have more work to do.
See, my worst thing, I've had that happen, and it's okay because I'll work out again. But when you don't get your stand points, there is no way to add. Like, you could futz with, I guess, the times.
I turned
off. It's very
hard
to add time to the day.
I don't want stand.
I want the ring, though.
Yeah, I do want that ring.
And if it's 11 o'clock and it's 2 hours, like you physically can't do it. It's like there's no point in even drawing life anymore.
Oh, your rings are so much better than mine. I have to really get to work on my rings.
We'll motivate each other, Leo.
All right, I'm gonna share my rings with you because that's depressing. That's good. So sharing, it's a terrible icon. It looks like something from the 70s.
But what's great is that they give you canned responses. So if I see yours come in, I could say, way to go, Leo, or Shazam, or awesome.
Pow!
Or you could trash talk you like, is that all you got? Lame. Get move faster. So I mean, there's a...
Yeah. It suggested Megan and you. Apparently, all right, nice. So I'm gonna share it with you and Megan.
Awesome.
I don't know why Alex Lindsay's on here. I don't think he has an Apple Watch. So it's just looking at people. Is it looking at people who have Apple Watches?
It's people who have activated an Apple Watch with an Apple ID that you have in your contacts.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to share it with you and Megan.
It's
apparently,
the same way
I don't
used to
have Serenity.
Digital touch.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. So now I'll know that you're beating the hell out of me.
I don't know if you want Serenity. It's like Serenity just completed a 2-hour roller derby workout, and you just want to give up.
Yeah, that's so good. I'm reviewing the new Fitbit version 2, and so I've on Saturday. I'm not kidding. I was on the streets in New York from 2:30 in the morning until 9 o'clock at night, and so I had to make sure that I got back to my room well before midnight so I could take for the review as many screenshots as possible. As okay, you did 31,000 steps, you walked 13.2 miles, you climbed 22 flights of stairs, because I want that to be the representation of what my activity is generally like.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, something more serious, less frivolous. Okay. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court. Apple had its day in court today, in front of the Supreme Court. We'll talk about questions.
I found out about that yesterday. I mean, Samsung released everything that happened yesterday already, so.
Yeah. And we can also talk about Samsung. This is the Schadenfreude moment, but it looks like Samsung is now, according to the Wall Street Journal, discontinuing the Note 7.
Well, there, but for the grace of God goes any manufacturer.
I don't know if that's true, but let's talk about it. Hold on. Coming up. But first, let me talk about my tracker. Here's another thing I was very glad to have as I'm traveling around. My tracker. There's things you don't want to lose, like your keys or your passport. And having the separation alerts, I have my passport in a special passport wallet that's big enough to put this, and it's not very big. This is Tracker Bravo in. It's about the size of a quarter, a little bit thicker, a lot lighter, though, because it's anodized aluminum. And, of course, you can also get stuff engraved on it, or this is the printing, the silk screening on it. It's really, really, actually, I don't know what it is. They say it's ultraviolet, somehow ultraviolet printed on here, so it doesn't kind of rub off or scratch off. But this is awesome. So this is a Bluetooth tracker. There's not a GPS in here. The GPS is in your phone. You pair it to your phone. And your phone can track up to 10 trackers at once. That means you could have trackers everywhere, your remote controls. You can have it on your kitty cat. It's small enough you could put it in a collar, and they have a little waterproof thing that they can attach it to, or that you can put around it. So it's really actually perfect for that. And then here's the beauty part, and there's settings for all of this. There's two customizable two-way separation alerts. So if you leave your phone behind, your tracker beeps. If you leave your tracker behind, whatever it's attached to, keys, passport, your phone beeps. And then, so that's within the Bluetooth range of around 100 feet. But then they also have this, and this was brilliant. And I asked them, did you guys think of this ahead of time? And they said, yeah, this was kind of the long-term plan. But it only works when you sell a lot of them, and now they've sold 1.5 million of them, the Crowd GPS network. So whenever your tracker's out there, your keys are lost, your passport's left behind at the train station, but anybody who's running the tracker software, when they walk by your keys or your passport, it makes a note of that and sends you an alert. And they've just turned on notifications, so it'll actually notify you. Your keys were just seen, your passport was just seen right here. So you'll get an update, a GPS update. This map is updated all the time. Look at all the trackers all over the country. I could testify it. To it all over the world. They also have something new called the Tracker Atlas that works with your Tracker Bravo or other third-party Bluetooth trackers to pinpoint your item on a customizable floor plan of your house. You just ask Tracker Atlas where your item is. And it doesn't just say it's at home. It says it's under the couch, dude. It's hidden. It fell behind the sofa. Now, one other thing I want to mention about this. There are other Bluetooth trackers, but this one, which is awesome, has an exchangeable battery. And it's very easy. The battery depends on how you use it. It will last up to a year. If you have all the separation alerts turned on and you use it a lot, you press this button to say where's your phone and all that, maybe 4 or 5 months. But it's really, the batteries are just those little coin-sized batteries you get at the drugstore, and it's trivially easy to replace it. So actually, proactively, every 3 months, I just replace my tracker battery because I always want to keep track of where my keys are, my passport is, and all of that. This is the tracker. We're going to get you 30% off your entire order if you go to thetracker.com and use the promo code MACBREAK, thetracker.com. The hardest thing to do is to find the website. Your belongings, you'll know where they are, but their website, it's a little spelled a little different, thetracker.com. And don't forget that promo code MACBREAK for 30% off, and that includes the printing, the engraving, and as many trackers as you need. I love this. Is nice, this MacBreak Weekly one. I can't use it yet because we're still, when we use it in the ads, we want to show it, but someday I'll have that too. Tracker, get yours today, thetracker.com. And we thank them so much for making the MacBreak Weekly possible. Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie. Which do you want to talk? Let's talk about Samsung, because Schadenfreude.
Yeah, or Samsung.
Sam.
We could talk about Android 7.1 developer preview with circular icons, but okay, Samsung.
I feel for him, and I have to say, I think the competition is healthy for Apple, so I regret that this is happening. I also thought the Note 7 was a really great phone. I turned mine in, of course, at the beginning of the recall. I debated it, but after about the 60th phone burned up, I thought, yeah, it's not. And because I was going to get on a plane and a boat, I wasn't about to carry it with me. But now we've seen six in the U.S. alone, six incidents of the fixed phone, the replaced phone, catching on fire. And at least in two of those incidents that I know about, the phone was in somebody's pocket or on somebody's bed. It wasn't being charged. And that's really scary if a phone just spontaneously combusts. Yeah. What's going on? And is Samsung really being as forthright as they need to be?
Who knows? This is as bad as it gets. And it's gone beyond the question of can they fix these phones? It's that now, how much work are they going to have to do to convince airlines to allow these devices on the plane? The last time we've seen this, of course, is when people had those hoverboards, where an entire industry got shut down by basically saying every single form of public transport, saying that you are not allowed to even have these on board because we feel as though they're so dangerous. At that point, the brand is completely impossible to reclaim. And the fact that even replacement batteries weren't eliminating the problem,
I want to say, though, that it's not clear that they were replacement batteries. They were replacement phones, and there's some speculation because they turned them around in a week that they were not in fact replacing the batteries but changing the firmware, because those who had the replacement said, yeah, the battery life's terrible. So that they were doing messing with software to turn it around fast. That's pure speculation. I don't know.
Right now, remember that Samsung went from a voluntary recall to a government recall, which puts a lot more obligation on them, which means that they actually had to come up with a plan to address it that had to be talked about with the government. So I would be very surprised if all they did was pull out the fuse from the stick of dynamite that was inside the phone and say that this was a fixed thing. I don't know if the government would have approved that. So it's clearly they thought that it was a problem with a certain line of batteries from a certain factory, or maybe even just a certain limited production run. It's probably now that they have a problem with the battery circuit, charging circuits themselves. It's because lithium batteries, you have to treat them extremely patiently. If you treat them within the range they're supposed to be charged at and discharged at, they're perfectly fine. Once you hook them up to something that is, once you basically bruise them, there's almost a time bomb effect going on there.
So what Samsung, I want to be very clear to anybody who's listening, I doubt there are many, but anybody who's listening who has a Note 7, and what Samsung is saying today, turn it off, don't turn it on again, And we're going to send you a fireproof box.
Yep. Jesus.
A fireproof box with thermal insulation.
Is a problem for them now.
And you're going to... So they're refunding everybody. What Samsung is doing right is they're backing this. They're standing behind it. They're refunding everybody. They're not... They didn't dilly-dally about discontinuing it. But at the same time, I don't think they've been as forthright as I would like them to be. Maybe they have with the CPSC about what exactly is wrong. And maybe they didn't know, because six new replacement phones burst into flames too, maybe they were wrong about what was wrong.
It could be the battery connector. It could be just so many little things. You think about that, these are not going to be hand carried back to Samsung. They're going to be put on board planes. And so I bet that that's what the carrier and that's what the shipper insists on. And it's also worth noting that there have been no reported problems with the Galaxy 7. So whatever shared DNA there is between these two phones, and there is a lot, it doesn't mean that their entire engineering pipeline is screwed up. It means that there was something they changed with this phone, or again, something they did with this production run that was bad. But once again, there's a point at which you can reclaim the brand, and there's a point at which no, it's just really just screwed up.
According to XDA developers, the box that Samsung is sending consumers for return comes with gloves, too, besides insulation. And it's specifically labeled that it's for damaged, defective lithium-ion batteries and, quote, it's forbidden to transport by aircraft.
Yeah.
So they're not even putting these on planes. Yeah. They have to ship them by ground. Yeah. You're right. Okay, so I'm sorry. I wanted the consumer alert to get out there. Now, but you're right, Andy. Yeah, the real issue
is
this.
If it's a collector's item, you're a maniac. just send it back.
I hesitated, and now I'm glad I got rid of it. Now, I took the money, and I bought an iPhone 7 with it. I suspect more than a few people have done that. Google quickly getting the Pixel out at a surprisingly similar price point, saying, but how damaging is not just to the Note 7 brand, because that's dead, to the Galaxy S7 brand, the Note 8 brand, the Galaxy S8 brand, and the Samsung brand. Is it really over?
See, 2 years ago, I would have said that this was really, really hard. I mean, like, again, famously, Tylenol went above and beyond to reclaim their reputation following their incident. But we live in such a strange time now, Leo, where, you know, previously, and I don't want to bring politics into it, but I will, previously, you had one incident with a politician and their career, their run for office, whatever, it was done. And today you have, you know, things that certainly a majority of people find objectionable on a daily basis, and you're fine. And we see that in brands, too. There are things that would have killed a brand, just absolutely killed it 5 years ago. And we see today on Android Central, people are like, I'm thinking about keeping mine. I'm going to buy another one immediately. I can't get a new one fast enough. And I don't know where the cultural shift happened, but we're much less intolerant of brand or personality failure than we used to be.
The Note 7 was unique amongst phones. I mean, it's not merely another and also RAM. I mean, it had a stylus. It was the unique design is beautiful. It's a large screen and a small body. There were lots of things.
Original phablet. People really
it was. Yeah.
But I bet if you did a poll, I want to see this, and I hope Android Central does this, but did a poll saying, would you buy a Galaxy Note 8 if they released it next month? I believe I'd be shocked by the amount of people that said yes.
If we extend that to the next version of the Note, then it's the people will buy the next iteration of, let's just call it the next large size Samsung premium smartphone. I would even wonder if they're going to continue with the Note brand because it's been so damaged. But the thing is, I think this is akin to what if Apple unfathomably and unthinkably had a similar problem with the 6 Plus or the 7 Plus. It's not that people would never buy another iPhone. They would look for signs that whatever it was that was causing this huge problem with this device, they have fixed it and addressed it. And this shares no DNA with that previous model. And the reason for that is because people aren't buying Galaxy Note 7s because it's a crappy phone, or it's the one they're forced to buy, or it's the only one that runs the software. It's because it's an elite product it gives the same level of satisfaction to its users as the iPhone 7 Plus does, right? The iPhone 6 Plus does. So it's going to take a lot for the world's leading manufacturer of smartphones, which is what Samsung is, to have an ongoing problem selling smartphones because they make good phones. It's just this one kind of explodes.
And it does
lead into it. Fireproof.
Does it extend to other smartphones? Should we?
These types of batteries, again, if they go bad, if you ding them a little bit,
yeah.
I've built some stuff and I have like dropped a lithium battery and decided that I'm not going to use that battery again because yeah. I don't have the wherewithal to make sure that nothing has happened to that right. battery. As a matter of fact, I got someone linked to me. I'm going to give you an example of how bad sometimes fear about this can be. Someone linked to me a story from China that a iPhone 7 user claims that his battery in his iPhone exploded and caused burns and caused scarring. It's possible that, again, it was dropped and damaged. It's possible this was a total fraud. It's possible that he bought a knockoff that doesn't have Apple components in it. And it's possible that it's a legit phone that was charged with a faulty charger that damaged the battery. So this is, I think we're going to see a lot of people, maybe some writers who are not that great, trying to amplify the attention of this by trying to claim that now Apple has a problem. Now these other manufacturers have a problem. Again, anything that has a battery of that kind, and it is, again, if it's maltreated, could have a problem. But it's not something, it's a problem that's very, very well accepted. It's very, very well understood, and it's very, very easily avoided.
There's a level of catastrophic failure that occurs to every lithium-ion battery in every product, but it is usually a very small handful of devices that have been subject to some sort of external stressor. The level of catastrophic failure in the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 was what led to the recall.
So here's the from Samsung.com, updated consumer guidance for the Galaxy Note 7. You need to exchange your phone for another device. We're gonna, you know, and but more importantly, you need, actually, here's one. This one is maybe better. And thanks to the chat room, this is from the UK. This is a little bit more dramatic. Updated today.
This is in an accent, which is amazing.
To all of our Galaxy Note 7 customers, we're truly sorry we have not met the high standard that you expect from Samsung. We thank you for your patience during this time and apologize for the inconvenience we have caused. We would like to reassure you and all our Samsung customers that the Galaxy Note 7 is the only device affected. But Samsung has lost billions on this. In fact, one analyst, according to the Wall Street Journal in Korea, says that the one quarter cost of this could reach $2.8
billion. Yeah. And that doesn't factor in the cost of the relaunch. Because when they come up with their next large screen phone, the budget for just convincing people that we have completely addressed this problem and just the budget for making it attractive, maybe even financially for people to have some faith, and also the budget for if you have at any point held a basketball, a baseball, or a football in your hands, we are going to give you a free – or a microphone in your hands. We are going to give you a free Galaxy Note 8. Because we need to send that first family on the inflatable raft into the ocean to prove that the shark is really dead.
Yeah.
And only when they come back safely are other people going to be going back into the water.
I mean, at this point, I would take a Note 8. I would figure, well, man, this is probably going to be the safest phone ever.
You know, particularly for $90, that's going to be a good value.
I mean, some people, as soon as there's a problem with the airline industry, they will not get on a plane. And other people are like, it's the safest time to fly. That's really a personal decision. And you can get a Galaxy S7 if you love Samsung. You can get a Galaxy Note 5 if you love the Note. You can get a Pixel. You can get an iPhone. Just get something else.
Yeah.
Right now, just get something else.
Yeah. So there's a Schadenfreude segment for the week, and I hope you enjoyed it. Actually, Samsung and Apple are in court. They're in the Supreme Court today. This is over the design patents. So there were two separate Samsung actions against Samsung by Apple. One was over violating patents like slide to unlock, you know, actual patented technologies. And the other was over the design patents. That is effectively saying Samsung copied Apple to trick consumers into buying Samsung phones because they would think they were iPhones. And this is in today's questioning. They did, of course, you have 1 hour arguments before the Supreme Court justices then go think about it and sometime later, probably in the spring, rule. Justice Anthony Kennedy said several times, according to CNET's Shara Tipkin, if I were the juror, I simply would not know what to do. The justices used the analogy of a Volkswagen Beetle in their questioning to understand the positions of Apple, Samsung, and the Justice Department. Just some justices pointed out the Beetle's design was what makes that car different from all others. But Samuel Alito remarked that some of the people don't care what a car looks like. Instead, they're looking for good gas mileage or other features. Sounds like the justices are as confused as those jurors. She writes, actually, this is... Apple argues a Samsung win would weaken the protections afforded to new creations. Notably, the devices in question haven't been on the market in years. Quote, the justices, this is from Apple's pleading, the justices certainly seem to be thinking about establishing a new legal standard for Section 289 of the Patent Act should be applied. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is Steve Chang, an intellectual property law attorney who was at the hearing. I'm sorry. I apologize. The justices seem to be thinking about establishing a new legal standard for 289 and asked a lot of questions dealing with details like jury instructions and the kind of evidence that would be needed. So they're focusing more on how a jury is supposed to judge a design patent.
Good question.
Well, it's a question we even asked during the original trial. Mm-hmm. How do you take, you know, I guess it was a 10-person jury, but how do you take 10 people off the street and say, okay, tell us, help us with this patent law thing.
And a separate issue is like you can copy something that can still not be illegal. So it's not just a case of whether it looks alike or not. It's whether that looking alike is illegal. Like it could be functional, but if it's designed for confusion, that's a different thing. Intent is a big part of the law.
Well, in her arguments, Kathleen Sullivan for Samsung said, it makes no sense to give a patent holder the entire profits from a device for infringing narrow design patents. Can't disagree with her. She had 25 minutes, but she was interrupted 2 minutes into her remarks by Justice Kennedy with the jury question. So it sounds like the justices are kind of changing the focus of this. I'm not an expert on this. I'll have to watch this week in law on Friday and see what they say about it.
The weird thing, though, is that there was I think it was Ina Fried or someone had a statement from Samsung about the court deliberations today, but they wrote it yesterday. And it was all over Twitter last night. And they weren't sure how that was going to actually, how the judges would actually feel about that.
Yeah, probably not great. Samsung proposed jurors consider two factors when determining what a relevant article of manufacture is. What does the design patent claim and what is the product to which it has been applied? I'm scanning through this. I don't know if these are such legal fine points at this point. It sounds like that the Supreme Court, and this is not unusual, wants to narrow the case down from something big about patents to something a little bit more easily digested and less sweeping.
There are just so many fine points here. Yeah. I don't think that if you look at the original Samsung Galaxy phones, I don't think there could be any doubt that they were I won't speak as if they were intentionally trying to confuse because I can't see into the human the souls of the human mind. But it was clearly if there was a design element from the iPhone they could replicate, they did replicate it. On the other hand, when you look at some of the details in the suit, you're talking about rounded corners and a home button at the bottom. And you want to counter that by saying, are you saying that an object that is designed to be slid in and out of a pocket should have razor sharp corners,
right?
or a rounded corner simply natural? And then you also have to bring up, well, let me give you the panoply of 10 different devices from 10 years before the iPhone that also had a clicky button at the front and center below the screen. And it would be like Miracle on 34th Street. Say, well, I have other examples, Your Honor. Okay, just put them on the desk. And then you have porters coming in with bushels and bushels of phones and digital scales and trios and PDAs. So you want to have an ability so that people who are trying to steal the look and feel of a device that's not a simple design thing, and you want also someone to say no, you're not allowed to have a device with one button at the front. Like, okay, whatever. If you think that's brilliant, if you think that's protectable, good luck surviving a fight against a bear, because I don't think he'll take that argument either.
This is I'll tell you how unusual this is. It's the first time the Supreme Court has heard a design case since the 1800s.
Yeah.
So they don't like to weigh in on this. And apparently they're not really weighing in on the patents. They consider that decided. They're weighing in on the award. Mm-hmm. And so it's that $400 million that Samsung had to pay. Samsung's trying to reduce that and says, you know, such a big award stifles innovation.
Yeah, because that is a good point, too. The size of that award implies that the only reason why people were buying Samsung phones were because they thought that the rounded corners and these other in the slide to unlock made them think it was an iPhone, as opposed to people thinking that, well, I would like to have an iPhone. Unfortunately, I don't want to switch from AT&T or it's not available in my country or it's not available in my carrier. However, here's a phone that has a lot of what I like about the iPhone, so I'm going to buy it instead. What I've been trying to figure out since I started reading about this was that how much of that is allowed for, let's say, a punitive sort of thing. Like if you violate someone's copyright, you don't get back 100%. You get back 300% of what you lost as a discouragement for people to do that again. So this is very much a read and listen issue for me, as opposed to in 1953, with the introduction of the Pop-Tart, there was a challenge against the Hostess company. I don't know.
And this is only one of the two patent lawsuits. The other one was also in court last week. The U.S. Court of Appeals reinstated the $120 million award to Apple over slide. The three patents were slide to unlock, autocorrect.
Just in time for Apple to stop using it.
And yeah, right. We no longer have it, do we? Autocorrect we still have. And oddly enough, Apple apparently had patented the method to detect a phone number in a text or an email so that it could be clicked to make the phone call.
Data detectors patent.
Data detectors. Yeah.
Yeah. The bulk of the award, $98.7 million, was for the data detection patent. In any event, the Federal Circuit has reinstated the award after a panel of judges ruled it was wrong to throw out the verdict in February. So I wonder if this one will go to the Supreme Court as well. Sometimes you feel sorry for the Supreme Court.
And is it cheaper just to pay the verdict than it would have been to actually build it yourself? And in which case, just do it.
Right. $120 million sounds like nothing when you compare it to $400 million, right? The original damages for this appeals court wrong. Yeah, this is then the look and feel one is the other one. All right. So, but the total could be over $500 million, money Samsung needs right now.
Yes, I think Jenny Crane should immediately litigate this issue.
Wow,
that's basically how much money they make off of their least best selling fridge. So they're okay.
The fridges aren't doing too well either this week.
the porn fridge is doing great.
the exploding washing machine is not doing well, but the porn fridge is.
Samsung's not done copying, by the way. Did you see this cylindrical PC they announced?
The Mac Pro.
Come on.
It could have been anything. It's just that's the thing with Samsung, is it's always like a 90% sure they copied it, but it's just weird enough that you're like, it's not that close.
Here's one thing I would not copy.
I know, convenience.
Apple came out with a floor standing tower PC long after Windows machines were that way. Apple came out with the Mac Mini long after there were like hot plate sized Macs. Again, there's a point at which you can say there's definitely copying happening, and there's a point at say we came up with round. We invented round.
No, but this is like a Volkswagen with a hot tub on the top. I mean,
it's got a Harman Kardon speaker on the top.
It's got a hot tub on the roof.
Yeah, but it's using the fan, you know, the Vortex fan
it's got the same design in the front.
The front panel looks similar.
You could do anything with that. It could have been a square. It could be anything. Yeah. Like this is why, like, I'd be so like. And again, I'm not opposed to copying. Apple copies a lot of stuff too. Someone who grew up as a designer, it depresses me because I know there's these people who would do this fantastic job of making an amazing thing, but it's like make it look like that, and then you just want to sit there and hit your head.
Well, and frankly, a cylinder is not a very efficient design for a.
Make
PC.
It look like a cheese grater. I'd buy one. Yeah. I want
more cheese graters, Apple. Well, let's take a break. But when we come back, I want to talk about what Apple might announce in one more thing, one more event in October, and when that might be and what you know about that. Because I'm waiting. I want a new laptop. I do. I want a new laptop.
Wait, there's more.
But wait, there's more. First, though, a word from Texture. Now, I can give you a very hearty endorsement for Texture because it was a lifesaver on the plane, at the airport. You know, there's always a few hours extra in the airport. I don't know why, but it just is. And normally what I do is go to the airport newsstand and stock up on magazines. I didn't have to because Lisa and I both brought Texture on our iPads. And, man, I love it. Texture is like Netflix but for magazines. Over 200 of the world's best magazines. You might hear it and say, oh, yeah, it's probably, you know, a Boy's Life and Hot Tub Today. No, no, it's all the big magazines. In fact, I was reading the Atlantic articles about the election, Rolling Stone. Then I want to calm down, so I'd look at photo essays in National Geographic, The New Yorker's there, Sports Illustrated, there's Vogue, Cosmo. Yeah, I was reading a little Gossip and People. It's all there. And the really fun thing about Texture is before I left, you fire up Texture, say these are the favorites, auto-download these. They're on the iPad. So both planes, both ways. I thought everybody was going to have Wi-Fi in the future. Neither plane had Wi-Fi. It didn't matter to me because I had literally like 20 magazines I could read. Unlimited access to 200. And they're, by the way, it's the full magazines. And some magazine, it's interesting because I guess the magazine gets to control how it's done. And some of the magazines are just so cool. The Atlantic is really great to read online. Really done. They have additional features like video that you can't put in print. Every page of every magazine is there. The current newsstand editions, back issues too. They auto-download, which is really fun. It's also easy to find stuff if you're not sure, well, what should I read? They've got an editorial team that puts out top stories, the new and noteworthy section, and that's updated every day. They also have curated categories. And I love this. We only needed one Texture subscription because you can put it up to 5 devices per account. So I shared Lisa's account. We both had our own magazines, our own favorites on our own iPads. Sign up for Texture right now. You'll gain insider access to all the content from the world's most in-demand publications like National Geo. And even stuff that I really like this, that I'm not going to buy. I'm not going to subscribe to Billboard or Ad Age. I've mentioned this before. But because of my business, you know, I like seeing the Hot 100 on Billboard, stuff like that. See what's keep up with what's going on in the industry. So it's kind of cool you get that too. I love it. You will too. And we've got a free trial so you don't have to pay anything to find out. Texture, T-E-X-T-U-R-E, like text plus your texture. That helped, didn't it? No, T-E-X-T-U-R-E. Forget what I just said. Texture.com/twit. And you'll get instant access for free right now. It doesn't have to be for travel anytime. The beach, wherever. It's nice to have those magazines in such a compact form. Your phone, too. And not just iOS, Android as well. But you can put them on your phone and on up to 5 devices. And on your iPad and on your Android device. And we thank Texture so much for their support. So it's we're definitely having an October Apple event, right? Or no?
I hate saying definitely until the invitations go out. It's because if it's kind of an event we suspect where it would be at Apple's town hall and it'd be a smaller meeting, they can move that around or change their minds up until pretty late in the process. You know, obviously up until those invitations go out. But I think, you know, if the new MacBook is what the MacBook Pro is what we suspect it would be, it would hugely benefit from some explanation on stage from Phil Schiller going up there and saying, you know, why these new features exist, what makes them compelling, and how MacBook Pro owners will benefit from them. So if that's the case, then, you know, we're rapidly approaching Black Friday sales in the U.S., and it's got to happen before then.
So Microsoft has sent out invitations to an October 26th event. And Gruber, in Daring Fireball, says that's one day before Apple's event to announce the new MacBooks. Wait a minute, what? If Apple moved its earnings from the 27th to the 25th to make room for an event. Ah, so he's basing this on Apple. What was the earnings announcement? When was it going to be?
I believe it was the 27th. It got moved to the 25th.
And it got moved to the 25th.
They've moved earnings calls before to make room for other things, like if they had to go to Washington to testify or to do one of several other things.
On the other hand, they did say due to a scheduling conflict.
Yes.
I mean, it could be Tim Cook at a dentist appointment. I mean, I'm not saying it.
No, and it could be. I mean, traditionally, they don't hold their events on Thursdays. They typically hold them on a Tuesday. Like the WWDC is on a Monday, but they're typically a Tuesday or a Wednesday event. So they could have had it on a Tuesday and then the earnings call, unless they wanted to get the earnings out of the way. Now, all this is so criminology, Leo.
I know, but that's all we got, baby. We got to.
Yeah. Unless they wanted to get the earnings call out of the way before having an event, and having an event the first week in November was too late for them.
Boy, it's so late. Jeez, I want it to be soon. But I guess it's only it's only 16 days away.
Yeah.
And what will they announce? New iPads?
No, I think the iPads are on the spring refresh cycle. Like, obviously, both iPads, the 12.9-inch and the 9.7-inch, could do with an Apple A10 upgrade. The 9.7-inch doesn't have the fast USB 3 bus of the larger one. The larger one doesn't have the P3 display of the smaller one and right. The two-tone color match. So there's all sorts of things that they could do to improve those. And rumor has it there'll be a 9.7-inch and maybe a 10.1-inch as well or instead of.
A
non-pro?
So
there's a lot they can do with iPad.
Non-pro or pro?
No, I think pro is the future. I think
everything's
now that they
pro
have
now.
The pencil, it would be difficult to have. Like, I would not like an iPad mini with a pencil. I would love an iPad mini with a pencil.
Yeah. I love the 9.7 Mac Pro, iPad Pro. Love it. That's what I took with me on my trip. It's small enough that it's easy to pack.
And it really does convert. Like, you have the keyboard out. It feels like a tiny netbook.
It's nice.
You take the keyboard off. It feels like an iPad. It does a really good job of that.
Yeah.
During my trip to New York, I, of course, had my 12.9-inch iPad Pro, but I also had my iPad Mini, which, just like Renee says, I treat like a netbook because I don't necessarily – when I'm walking around all day long in the city, I don't necessarily want to have a 13-inch screen, but I don't necessarily need one. I just have the ability to do about 800 to 1,200 words worth of writing or dump some photos from my camera. And so it's interesting to think about the difference between buying a $1,500 MacBook Air and, to solve the same sort of problems, buying a 13-inch iPad for $1,000 and a $500 iPad Mini. You might actually get more use out of having two iPads than one Mac.
My oddly enough, my iMac died while I was gone. It was it's the 2012, not a 5K. It was the last non-5K, and then it turned out there was a recall on the Fusion drives, a 3-terabyte drive. So, and mine is that serial number. So we're bringing it back to Apple. I guess I'm going to get a new hard drive. That's weird. But anyway, it just kind of stopped working. And it's a Fusion drive, and it looks like the SSD is fine. But the spinning disk, that's how a Fusion drive works, is not.
Yeah, I mean, there have been recalls for Macs over the years for everything, for graphics cards, for batteries, for hard drive platters. It's the failure rate is too high.
Initially, I thought, let's buy a new iMac. But then everybody said, what, are you crazy? There's going to be a... I felt like the iMacs had been updated. Are we due for a new iMac too?
They updated. They went to 5K 2 years ago in October. They went to the P3 display last year in October. So if they follow that pattern, there'll be a new iMac, probably on Intel's Skylake. It's unclear what the 21.5-inch will be because Intel didn't make... the Broadwell chip for that. So Apple had to stay with the Haswell chip. And they haven't made Skylake chips for it either. So I don't know what the future of that device is, if Apple's going to have to do something different with it. But the 27-inch iMac would probably get a spec bump at this point.
So it's probably due.
Yeah, don't buy a Mac until you don't think Apple's having an event or not.
I think the only thing you can buy at this point is an iPhone or an Apple Watch. Everything else you should wait and see, right? How about, and then, of course, the one that we really need badly, the one that really is the most dated, is the MacBook, right?
MacBook Pro. MacBook's
been updated.
Yeah, and MacBook Air has gotten, I don't know, a passive-aggressive update. It's, I guess, maybe a good way of framing it.
What's a passive-aggressive update?
I mean, like, it's not updated in a way that tells you that there's a future for the product. Like, it's not getting a Retina display. It's not getting a lot of things.
But we'll give you a haircut, but don't expect another one.
Like, we're holding you at this price point because we can't get the MacBook down to $900 yet, but I wouldn't get too comfy in that chair.
Passive-aggressive update. I like it. I like it. So best guess would be that the Air is kind of not long for this world, that the MacBook is going to be the new thin and light.
The Air replaced the original MacBook. Now the MacBook is replacing the Air. It's the circle of life.
Yes, the circle of life. We do desperately need new MacBooks. Type C connector or MagSafe? What are the Vegas odds at this point?
My head tells me that they're going to go to USB-C because that's where the future is. But I still like the fact that MagSafe cord pops off because I do that all the time. I pull it, I push it, I trip over it, and it doesn't fly halfway across my room the way that an iOS device or a MacBook would. So I hope they can do both, Leo. How about we get a Type C MagSafe? Just a little connector.
Or just keep the MagSafe and just put Type-C on there for the Thunderbolt. And
USB-C just adds so many features above everything else. Because not only just for adding data, but also this is now a MacBook that can be powered by a USB power brick. So this, you have so many options for how to get electrons into the thing. And the other thing is that the design of a MacBook Nothing is different from the design of the MacBooks that were that premiered with the MagSafe connectors. If you were to pull a MacBook off of your lap and were to fall to the ground, there's nothing that mechanical in there that can break. It's built with a lot of the same techniques they use to build iPads, and I have dropped my iPad I don't know how many times just off of a, from a standing height onto the floor, and I don't even worry about it. I'm sorry I did it, but I'm not saying okay. I'm not expecting to see a broken screen. So it's possible that the reasons why the MagSafe was a good idea are not as applicable today as they were before. So I'm hoping they go for USB-C. Hopefully they can invent this thing called a second USB-C. I don't know if
they'll give you so many. People will be complaining about how many USB. Why did the Apple give me so many? I don't know what to do with them. I have too many USB-C.
Well, think that there's a fan in there. That's the ventilation ports. Oh, no, there's just 19 studded on both sides of them.
USB-C ports for everybody.
I also wonder if – well, we're not going to see a Mac Pro
needs it. I mean, again, like you can argue about whether or not. So a lot of the Macs are totally bound by Intel at this point, and in some cases AMD. And you can argue that there were reasons not to go. I forget which version they're on, a Haswell version or whatever of the, because they're on Xeon processors, the Mac Pros. And you could argue that maybe, you know, the Broadwell wasn't good, and they were waiting for Skylake. But they said it was a massive OpenCL machine, and they're using these two big graphics cards. And as far as I know, those graphics cards were never updated. And I, you know, I'm not Apple. I can't speak for Apple's engineering team. But it seems to me, as a customer, if you're going to sell me an appliance, it's up to you to you're saying this is an appliance. You're taking responsibility for updating it, and you're going to put two fabulous graphics cards on there every year, if not every 6 months, for me. And they haven't done that in like 3 years. So that to me is hard to understand.
This laptop's from 2012. I want to get a new MacBook Pro. They'll be 13 and 15, same form factor roughly, except for the Type-C connectors.
They'll probably have, like, you know, the iterative design improvements that we've come to know and appreciate. Still,
you know what? There's nothing wrong with this aluminum unibody construct. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, we've gotten to a point where even with the Mac Pro, like, I have a 3-year-old Mac Pro that I use every day, and it's fine. A lot of people have a 2-year-old or last year's Mac Pro, and the difference when you go to Broadwell or you go to Skylake is not that big. Some people will tell you optimistically that they will get double-digit percentage increases, but realistically, you won't. Mostly, it's a power efficiency thing, so it's better for battery. But even professionals are not going to get a huge boost from it. So it's really an emotional thing that we've gotten used to having these updates every year, and because those chips exist, we should have them. We're paying absolute top dollar. Right. Apple's not discounting computers just because they're a year or 3 years old. They're charging the same prices. We should absolutely have the latest components. But I don't think it's safe to assume that they're going to be like miraculous increases.
No. And, as I use these computers, they don't feel that dated, that old, really.
No.
It's just that I've had them for a while. And what I don't want to do, and I think this is probably universal, is buy a brand new computer that is a 3-year-old platform or a 2-year-old platform.
Yeah. And then the new ones just come out right after. It's worse.
Yeah. So, there's this hesitancy, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you get a new Intel CPU on a mobile device, you can almost expect to have akin to new features. You can almost expect to get an hour of battery life for free, if not more than that. On a desktop, you do want a better GPU because so much of what the Mac does, whatever Apple operating system does, is powered by GPU. If you drag a window in the Finder, if you drag an icon from one window to another in the Finder, you are basically maxing out any CPU of any game system that was made 6 years ago with all the transitions it's doing. So there's things you'll notice, but it will realize what I used to say 12 years ago or 15 years ago about performance is still true. Your computer spends 90% of the time blinking the cursor while you do nothing.
Saying, what are you doing? Type something. Do something.
I could do this all day.
What are you doing?
Sometimes it feels like it does.
Actually, if Mac were more of a gaming platform, there'd be, I think, a lot more pressure to update it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even if you look at VR, like, you know, I don't think Georgia had any PCs until she got the Vive and the Oculus, and now she has two because you literally can't. And yes, that's niche, that's not mainstream, but it's quasi embarrassing that I can't run VR off of the Mac that I want to have in my house.
Apple doesn't really seem to care much about VR.
Oh, and the official thing is that Apple. Yeah, is that Apple doesn't get gaming. They don't get this. They have a lot of hardcore gamers at the very highest level of Apple. It's just they realize that the money's in the casual gaming and that the amount of effort and cost it would take to continually support high-end gaming is not where they're going to make the most money.
And gamers want to customize. They want to put their game own GPUs in. They want to update the GPUs. They just want to do things that Apple
doesn't. Double nitro fins on
the
back.
Yeah, it doesn't really fit Apple's aesthetic.
Well, also, there's a lot more to VR than just gaming. But I think that's right now it's a kind of a smartwatch level right now where the consumers have not yet said here is what we're willing to pay for to get as far as VR is concerned. And the second problem is that to get the sort of gee whiz wow VR platforming, it's not the sort of thing where you just build a new computer and release some APIs. Now we're talking about building custom hardware that is optimized just for VR or just has even just the ability of how do we put light into the user's eyeballs has to be new and different. And then even the computer that drives it has to be kind of at top of the line. And I don't think Apple wants to commit to making a bespoke Mac that's optimized towards driving a VR platform before they know what the hell a VR platform really is for.
Will K in the chat room is asking, what about updating the airports? Those are way overdue. And Google just announced kind of mesh style, Eero style, multi-module Wi-Fi solution. Will Apple do that maybe this month?
I don't think they would do that until they find a way to integrate it into a larger system. Like if they were to, I don't think they have any interest whatsoever.
They don't want to do a Me Too product.
Well, no, not that. I don't think they're interested in updating the Airport Extreme just to give it better radios, just to give it different ports and add a USB-C port to it. I think that they'd be interested in doing it to add mesh and also so that now the Home app has a much better understanding of who's where in the house and what's going on at different places of the house so that they can create it's not that they develop products to just create a demo, but I think that in part of their mind is like, if we have 5 minutes or 10 minutes during a keynote to really wow people as to why this is such a great thing, what would we show off? And that's the sort of thing that they want to do. So I think that they would do it. They're going to do it once they can have a whole house mesh network that knows that you've got four people in the family, that two of them are upstairs, one is in the kitchen, one is in the living room, so that when you do a Hey Shlomo command, they know exactly who's executing that command, and when they ask for an AirPlay stream, they know exactly where to execute it. So that's, I think, when we're going to see an update to networking.
Yeah, also, Apple's traditionally done like major products and then supporting products. And the Airport Extremes are always there to help. We have to go back a few years when Apple did those demonstrations. Like, I think Phil Schiller jumped off a stage to show that it really was wireless. And routers just weren't that common back then. And when the latest Airport Extreme came out, Apple was moving to 802.11ac. And now we have tons of routers that do that. But I think there was a feeling that in order to get to move these technologies forward, they had to be part of the end-to-end solution for those.
Do we put routers in the same category as cinema displays, a category that Apple is dialing out of?
Well, I mean, dialing out of is hard to – because, I forget who said this, but someone did it really well, is Apple totally ignores something until they don't. And it's very feasible that when we get the new MacBooks, we'll get a 5K P3 panel to go with them because that's when that product makes sense or when a new Mac Pro comes out. And it might just be that, Apple has an 802.11ac router. There's no real – new standard coming out that they have to advance it for, but something that downloads all your updates the way that the automatic feature on macOS does or on iOS does, and has them ready for you and starts caching things and doing a bunch of smart stuff on the back end. And one day, maybe it works as your HomeKit hub and does all these other things. That might be a product that Apple feels they need to make in order to move that industry forward. And then it's much more likely we'll get an update.
Maybe they're waiting till next year when the APFS comes out, the new Apple file system, and tie it. I mean, Time Machine is so nasty. It'd be nice to tie kind of some sort of snapshotting capability into a new router, maybe the router acknowledging that most home networks now have multiple Macs on it, multiple Apple devices.
Multiple iCloud accounts attached to it. Yeah. They could do a lot of cool stuff. I think another thing that's sort of universal about the way that Apple approaches products is that as big as they are and as unique as they are, I think they also acknowledge that there are a lot of really great Wi-Fi access points out there. They don't have to come out with one just because Asus is doing some great stuff.
Well, that's why I was thinking it was kind of like the cinema display, where they're just kind of basically saying, yeah, you don't need to buy it from us.
There's a time where to show off how great the Mac Pro is at video editing. My God, look, we got multiple we can do 4K editing. We can do a pro level color correction. There's no screen that really lets you show off how good it is. So they're and because they thought that, okay, we can actually make money off of this, now we'll make a screen. But now that you can, Dell can sell you a fantastic screen as good as the Cinema Display practically for half or less than half the price. I don't think that they're mad about that. I think they think, oh, thank God, we have one less product to think about now. We can put more design into the new button on the new watch.
Yeah, I'm not against that. I think that that's. On the other hand, as you point out, Renee, a 5K second monitor for a MacBook Pro might be an interesting product.
Yeah.
But might be is kind of the operative phrase. There is a new technology in Wi-Fi, though, even though it's not labeled with a letter. It's mesh, and that's really where it's the action's happening right now.
Well, that's question two, because like a lot of people have mesh networks with Sonos and don't even think that it's a mesh network because it's not used for their everyday Wi-Fi, but it's a very early and a very robust one. And if you start making it, well, we have this mesh network, and the advantage to that, if you're not familiar with it, is instead of having to do this IT-level work of bridging your networks, you can just put these little boxes around, and they'll take care of giving you great coverage everywhere. But then the question is, do we just make a box? Do we put a speaker on it? How good a speaker does it have to be? Well, what price does that make the speaker? Well, okay, we can't make the speaker for that. Then what are the utilities? Like, all of these are very big product questions, and Apple is a company. There are some companies, and I love them, that just put things out and then let the market help them decide. And maybe Apple Watch is an example of that. But Apple tends to like think these things through sometimes for a frustratingly long time, and then release something that they think is a holistic offering.
Boy, wouldn't it? Somebody in the chat room saying, wouldn't it be great if Apple bought Sonos? There's
AirPlay finally.
Yeah,
those two products, Apple. Those two companies seem to mesh in a way that's unique.
So and
Sonos needs Siri. You know, Sonos needs that.
Yeah. Yeah,
they have a huge display in the Apple Store starting last week.
Oh, interesting. Right, yeah. And after all, Google's now got the Google Home, Amazon Echo. You feel like Apple should have given that it has Siri, should have a play in that.
I think some of the most brilliant devices that any large and ambitious company can come up with are devices that encourage the person to want to buy more of them and put more of them inside and around the house. Those are the more places where someone can have your company's valuable services available, the more they're going to use those services. And that's why I think that particularly the new Google Mesh Network is so cool, is because you can spend $129 for one essentially Wi-Fi base station, which is about it's about the going rate for a decent one, maybe twice as much as a practical one. But what I love about mesh networks is that you just every time you feel as though, okay, look, I've had it with only getting two bars of signal coverage in the playroom, I'll just spend $129, which is, again, as far as these things go, is not that expensive. Put it in the room, plug it in, no configuration. It's just better. And then after 2 or 3 years, they become like LED light bulbs. You never had a plan to change every single bulb in the house with an LED light bulb, but gradually, by simply buying one of these little $20 bulbs every time it occurred to you that it'd be a good thing to have, now you have a system that's so much better, and it didn't really hurt you in the pocketbook to get it done. So once you have a system, something like that, and Sonos is a brilliant opportunity for Apple to do that, where every time someone says, of course you put a Sonos in the good one in the living room because that's where you listen to music, and then you put one. A little Sonos in the kitchen because you listen to music there, and then you decide you want a good one in the bedroom, and then maybe in 2 years you decide, it'd be really nice to be able to just transfer when I listen to a podcast or a show, I can just like go into the bathroom and shower and shave and listen to it there. But then once you have this once you have a HomeKit applicable base station that people don't know they've been putting these HomeKit things throughout their house, now when Siri can find them in the house and know that the owner of Apple ID XXXXX is now in the garage, I can send, I know that there is an alert that this person needs to hear. I will make sure that only this speaker in the garage plays this alert.
Yeah.
That's when you start to get people who are saying, I'm glad I spent money on these devices. I'm going to spend more money on these devices. And more importantly, that is, I've now voluntarily put on another set of handcuffs tethering me to this platform, because this platform makes me really, really happy.
This is where Google wants to be, right? It's where Amazon could be if they had a broader ecosystem.
A friend of mine went all in on HomeKit, and I got a chance to check out his place, and he had like the HomeKit fan, and he said movie time, and the blinds went down, and the lights changed colors, and the TV came on, and it really does make you think you're living in Tony Stark's house.
I'm so disappointed I think the activation word for that should be, we've got movie sign.
By the way, I mean,
my best friend.
The other reason this is a good thing for Apple is I think that people are concerned about privacy, and the Internet of Things concerns people about security. And these are two categories where Apple really seems to have the upper hand and can assert, no, we're the privacy and security company. And so wouldn't you rather have an Apple Siri device in your house than an Amazon Echo or a Google Home?
There were a series of articles, I forget the publication now, they just slammed Apple month after month for making developers have to waste all this time putting secure Wi-Fi chips and end-to-end encryption in their Internet of Things devices. And how dare they do that?
Yeah.
And now I'm looking back, and I don't have anything that's not end-to-end secure in my house.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a big problem. As a matter of fact, I play a lot with Raspberry Pi devices, and after being reminded last week by a news story, I had to go through all like 5, 6, 7 of them and make sure it ships with the default password, default user Pi, default password Raspberry. And I, on the ones that I actually use for stuff, I change the passwords. But sometimes I'm just playing with something. It reminded me that this thing that I don't think of as an internet-able device that has a computer and can support a botnet should probably have a change to its defaults.
Well, you saw that the UK, United Kingdom, they banned cabinet officials from wearing their Apple Watches in meetings. They'd banned cell phones some time before as potential espionage devices. But this has a microphone. This has a,
it's a compliment. They're treating it like a real computer.
Yeah.
How come my watch is only getting 20 minutes worth of battery life? Are you in politics or civil? Okay.
Why is my watch speaking Russian all of a sudden?
Yeah. Please do not block microphone, please.
I think that it's clear that this is a category, but the two categories, security and privacy, that Apple has a real opportunity to double down on, and awareness, public awareness, is so high of this now.
But there's a butter zone there, though. The thing I spend as much time in Android as I do in iOS, and I appreciate the added security on an iOS device. However, it's the Google services that are consistently giving me more viable results and more viable insights.
Because Google's willing to gather up all your information and digest it. And I agree with you. I'm willing to do that. But I think that increasingly we're going to see consumers reluctant to do that.
Well, again, it depends. Like the first time that I was showing when Google Now first got was first released, and the first time that people friends of mine were like seeing how I swipe to the left, and here's everything I've got going on today. Here's everything I've been reading on the web that's probably interesting to me. Here are only the sports scores that I'm following. Here are only the TV shows on tonight that I would likely want to watch. And here's the calendar stuff. And it's collating all this stuff inside one place, and also making very accurate guesses as to what's going to be important to me and what would just be a nuisance. That would, once I think most responsible users would ask the question, how secure is this and where does this information go? And if they like the answer to what they get, which is that, yes, Google is collecting lots of data. However, because A, they do think privacy is important, and B, they're also jealous of this incredibly valuable dossier they have on you, and they're not going to let anybody else have access to it. So a lot of people might decide that I would much rather have the slight, to their perception, slightly weaker personal privacy if it leads to a much better and much more useful product. Security, however, should be a non-starter. Every company has to prove that there is no way that someone could intercept this stuff. There's no way that someone could get in on our servers and harvest our data and then use it. So long as you trust the person that you're giving the data to, you're golden. But if you don't trust the person to protect that data, you may as well just be tacking it to the wall of a subway and letting anybody take a look at it.
Like, say, Yahoo.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Let's take a break. We haven't talked about the Dash thing. I know this is all you've been working on, Renee, for the last couple of days. It ruined your Thanksgiving. I hope you're not suffering from Dash PTSD, but we do want to talk about it and see what's going on. The latest on
it's
that
the developer
story.
In the App Store. I feel bad for him. Nothing's on me.
Yeah. Well, right. And I've heard others say the same thing. You know, I heard Jim Dalrymple yesterday on TNT say basically the same thing. This is a challenging story, but we'll cover it in just a second. And you also, I see, sent me a link to a smoking Samsung phone caught on video. There are reasons why you might want to have security in your house.
Oddly enough, caught by a Nest Cam.
Yeah. Where, is it playing? It's not playing.
It's going to walk in stage right.
Yeah. If playback doesn't begin shortly, try restarting your device. I've never seen this on YouTube.
No, me either.
Oh, maybe it's time for me to update my Mac. time to put Sierra on it. We'll be back in just a second. But first, speaking of Internet of Things, let's talk about my current favorite Internet of Thing device. And by the way, highly secure, because when the Ring video doorbell was designed by very smart people, they built in a capability for automatic updates. And this is, everybody agrees, the single most important feature of an Internet of Things device is the ability to update it. And in this case, the Ring video doorbell updates automatically whenever there's a patch needed, and they do it for you. And there's a lot to be said for that. You're going to love the Ring video doorbell. What is it? Well, it's a doorbell that replaces your existing doorbell in your house. It could be wired or unwired. The original Ring has a big battery, a lithium-ion battery in it that allows you to go for a year. So you could put this on any door, your bedroom door if you want. When people push the doorbell, it rings the chime. Now, I put it on our wired door at home. So it was easy peasy, and I'm no handyman, but I just unscrewed the doorbell. It had two screws. It was kind of falling off anyway. Two wires coming out of the door jam. The Ring kit is great. It gives you everything you need to mount the Ring in a much more, nicer manner than my original doorbell was mounted. It's even got a faceplate with terminal, screw downs and stuff like that. It comes with a level, the drill bit if you need it. I didn't need it. The appropriate screwdriver and bits. It even comes with a USB charging cable if you get the original Ring so you can charge it once a year. And it's got the right screws and all that stuff. They really do a nice job. I didn't actually need most of that stuff. It was very easy to install. Then you pair it to your Wi-Fi. And the reason you do that is that's when the magic happens, because this Ring video doorbell has an HD camera in it, a microphone in it, and a speaker. And now when anybody rings my doorbell, it rings the doorbell in the house just as it always did, but it also rings my phone, my Mac. There's a Mac app for it, my tablet, and I can answer the door. I can say, hello, who's there? I can see them. I can talk to them. I can pretend I'm home, which is very handy for home security. Chases that burglar away for sure. It also is helpful if you're getting package delivery. You can say, yeah, I'm in the bathtub. Can you just put it on the doorstep? I'll be right there. I'll sign for it tomorrow, whatever it is. I love this. Russell, our IT guy, has a Ring video doorbell at his office. You know, he's contract IT guy, so he's always out and about. So when the UPS guy or the FedEx guy comes with a router or some hardware he needs, he can see them. He can say hello to them, no matter where he is on the job, and then say, "Hey, here's the code to put it inside the door," and they do that. It's so great. You can also keep an eye on things out front because it's got motion detection. It's so cool. They also now have the Ring Pro, which is 1080p instead of 720p. It doesn't have the battery because this would be good for anybody who doesn't, has a wired doorbell. And they've added additional features. They took the Ring and they turned it into a stick-up cam. Everything minus the button to go ding-dong. So it's got the camera, the speaker, the microphone. You can use it to keep an eye on other parts of your property and hear and speak to people in your backyard. Hey, kids, get out of my yard! And it's so much fun. Plus, you can get a solar panel, so you don't even need to have power for it. The solar panel will keep it charged. They put together kits, a variety of kits. They call them the Ring of Security kits. All of them include a doorbell, the solar security sign to let people know. This sign is great. It lights up at night, and it gets its power from the sun. So You don't have to plug it in. It lights up at night and lets people know you're protected. The kits can include, if you want one, a stick-up cam, the solar panel, or the Chime, which is a little device you plug into the wall that will ring. So if you don't hear your doorbell in the workshop or, you know, in the kitchen or whatever, you could put a chime there and you can hear it better. It's just, this is just awesome. So take a look. Go to ring.com/MacBreak and look at all of the security, the Ring of Security kits, and pick the one you want. And we're going to get you up to $150 off them when you go to ring.com/MacBreak. Ring.com. What are you laughing at? Ring.
No. I was. This is a very, very timely thing because I don't have a social anxiety disorder. But like this morning, as I was like getting office stuff done, there was like a strange man in a van who I didn't recognize, that didn't have any like delivery logos on it coming up, and so I was able to use. I don't have the ring. When I finished the review, I had to send it back. But I do have like a camera pointing at the driveway, so that do I feel like I have enough social strength to have a conversation with a total stranger about something I don't know what it's going to be about, or do I want to just keep looking at the screen to see if he goes away?
I would choose the latter. That's what I would do. I just sit there and watch. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But with the ring, you can actually, you know, go, hey. Yeah, you. Get out of here. It's awesome. I love it. Ring.
Not you. Yes, you.
Yeah, right. Ring.
If you're not carrying an edible arrangement, go away.
Hey, you with the pizza. No, don't go to the neighbor. Come right here.
ring.com/MacBreak, and you get up to $150 off of their Ring of Security kids. Now, let's talk, before we get to the picks, our last story. I saved it for last. Because I know poor Renee just shakes whenever I mention it. So what? First of all, I'm not familiar with Dash, but developers know it, right? It's a developer tool?
Yeah, it's a tool that provides offline documentation and snippet management.
Okay. And it was iOS or?
There's an iOS and a Mac app. It's the iOS app that got pulled from the store and the associated account suspended.
Oh, that's interesting. So the Mac App Store still has Dash.
I believe so, but he advised everybody when he put up his initial blog post to migrate their license to the non-App Store version as quickly as possible.
Who is he?
I forget, I'm going to butcher his name if I try to pronounce it, but he's a Romanian developer.
Okay. Apple has apparently not only banned the app, at least from the iOS store, but killed his account. Apple says because of review fraud.
Yes.
He has responded saying what?
So initially, all that happened was he put up a blog post saying that Apple removed his account. He was told that it was for fraud. He never committed any fraud, and there is no appeal to this process. And that sort of got the community buzzing because, first of all, developers are already super anxious about the App Store and it being a black box. And there's no such thing as no appeal because any company where you can email Tim and he'll respond to you on his iPad, there's multiple layers of appeal. But
no official appeal process.
Fear. Yeah, there's no. It's not a court. There's no like process in place.
Well, it's a private business. Of course not.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So at that point, you know, there was just a lot. Nobody really knew what was happening. And then Apple finally put out a statement yesterday. And we were one of the outlets that got the statement. And they said that, well, because people were very confused because Dash is a beloved application. They couldn't see anything that was remotely like fraud with it. But Apple said that during a course of a lengthy investigation, I believe it was at least a couple of years, they'd seen multiple instances of review fraud, both reviews, positive reviews for that developer's apps and negative reviews for competing apps, and that those apps were spread across two accounts involving 25 apps and close to 1,000 negative reviews. And that Apple believed the accounts were linked because they used the same credit card, they used the same bank account, they had the same devices logged in for development testing, and they use the same bundle ID for the apps. And we should point out, independently from Apple, if you go to like AppShopper or software.com, they list Dash alongside a bunch of these apps that supposedly committed the fraud under one list is coming from the same place. So there's obviously some sort of conflation between these apps. And the developer then put out another statement saying that he was absolutely not responsible for this. It was an account he started for a family member. He had no responsibility for it, that he was trying to discuss this with Apple. He was going to do a blog post on their behalf. And then all of a sudden, he felt that they just, you know, completely threw him under the bus. And so he put out this statement and he released a copy of an audio recording that was between him and a member of Apple's worldwide developer relations team, where they were basically discussing this blog post. The really interesting thing here is just how different these two accounts are. And to be clear, the developer has made absolute statements about this, and people love this developer and his apps. And there's a tendency, he's an underdog, absolutely. Developers always deserve the benefit of the doubt. Apple has put out a statement, and that usually requires a senior vice president to sign off, and that means they have triple, quadruple, octuple checked everything before they do this. So you have these two very different statements, and where they disagree is that Apple believes that there was fraud committed by these two accounts. He says he has nothing to do with them. They believe they are linked. He doesn't believe he has any responsibility with it. He said Apple wanted a blog post. It sounds like Apple says he wanted to do a blog post. On the call, one way of reading it is that Apple's trying to get him to sort of cover their ass and say that they didn't make any mistakes. Another read is that Apple's trying to bend over backwards and is willing to do almost anything to let the developer sort of save face and get out of this situation. And then something happened between that phone call and yesterday that made Apple feel that there was absolutely no way forward, and they had to make a public statement. And the interesting part is apparently these cases happen all the time, and almost always the developer goes, oh, shucks, I won't do it again, and they just keep on going because Apple will err on the side of caution. So and also, if there are cases of fraud and he said there's no responsibility, Apple's typical response would be your bank account, your credit card, you're absolutely responsible for this. So there's just so much muddying of this issue that it's hard to see who's right and wrong. And of course, Twitter varies back and forth between both, but it's possible everybody just committed a lot of mistakes here and we ended up in a really bad situation.
Apple is absolutely right to attempt to preserve the integrity of the review process. That's critical. You've got to be able to trust reviews, and if fraudulent reviews are posted, then they have every right and even, I think, an obligation to cancel the account and even maybe go so far as to pull the app from the App Store. The problem is you can sell an app for a Macintosh yourself, but yeah, there's no way to get an app on iOS without Apple's approval. They're a gatekeeper.
Yeah, you can do a web app, but those are incredibly limited compared to an App Store.
Yeah. This is really a case of he said, she said. I don't know, you know.
It's just that there's so many different it's easy to know whose side you're on. When I first saw the blog post, oh, I know whose side I'm on. And then you hear a few more details. Okay, now I know whose side I'm on. And then you hear the response to that. It's clearly that it's not so much he said, she said, he said the other, or whatever, two different people said different things. It's more like, what information did one side have that the other person did not have that caused them to do something that seems rational given what they had? It seems the only things that I thought were kind of maybe not a great idea from Apple's side is to say, this decision, we are announcing it, and it is irrevocable. It's like, well, no, it is not irrevocable. You own the store. You can do whatever you want. You can change your mind. It's clear. Exactly. And so it's clear there was a lot going on here. And I think that a lot of the problems with the story were just that the velocity of the information that was coming out and the need to, once you have new information, if you are a news outlet, you have to sort of report on it. So I think it's more of an ongoing sign that people are concerned about, developers are concerned about the App Store because, again, it is the only marketplace. You cannot cheese off the person who controls the keys to the only marketplace where you're selling the one product that you're making a lot of money on. So if there's anything that seems odd, it makes a lot of those other developers pay really close attention to see, is this going to affect me, or is this something where a developer clearly didn't read information that was available to everybody at the same time?
Yeah, so the reason there were 470 comments on this on Hacker News, and you know, partly is because, of course, there are a lot of developers apparently who use Dash, so it's a popular app. But more that there has been this pent up dissatisfaction in the developer community about Apple's high handed running of the App Store in general. I mean, that's been an undercurrent for years, and we've even talked about it. And so I think there are a lot of people who probably jumped to the conclusion, oh, Apple's at it again, until Apple was forced to reveal, you know, more. And then, you know, I'm like you, Andy, I don't know who to believe. So,
Interesting. There are some improvements happening. Like Phil Schiller is now uniquely in charge of the App Store. And in previous years, it would be unclear whether this was his job or Eddie's job, but it might have taken a lot longer. Like we saw an email from Phil Schiller that 9to5 Mac published. And also apparently there's a VP of App Store now, which might help, you know, further lubricate these sorts of things. So structurally, it seems like this is making huge progress. iTunes fraud, though, is like beyond the App Store. That's an organization that's existed since iTunes existed. And they're apparently really good at their job and they don't get a lot of false positives. And we don't see headlines about this almost ever, because most of the time the person, like the sort of easy answer to this is, oh, you know, darn, my cousin was using that account. I'll make sure she knocks it off. Sorry about that. And they're like, no problem. Keep going. And it all gets settled. But he was adamant that he did not do anything wrong. And at the same time, someone apparently at Apple is adamant that they didn't make any mistakes. And when you have those sorts of attitudes, I think inevitably, when everyone wants to save face, you don't save the situation.
And there's no reason to ask for government to step in with regulation. Or it would be nice if there were some, you know, quasi-judicial process that Apple would offer for this kind of a situation, right? Maybe an independent judge or adjudicator to... Is there an adjudication process? Any kind of process?
There,
no.
There's an internal process, and it does get escalated. And the final process is a senior group of people at Apple. And that's sort of like last year when we had was it 2 years ago with the widget thing? That gets escalated to a group of people. And eventually, you know, it hits Phil Schiller's desk.
It's not good for Apple only because they have in the past appeared very kind of capricious in what they all approve and then disapprove. And the pcalc case is the widget pcalc case is a good example. And so this just adds to that. I think Apple needs to at this point say, all right, we're going to have an adjudication process and we'll have an independent adjudicator that, and we can present both sides of the case can be presented, something like that. That's as much important to the integrity of the Apple App Store process, I think, as making sure the reviews are accurate. Yes.
Well, we're not talking about putting someone in jail or not not in jail. No, I'm saying that it's not as important as that. And the level of transaction, the amount of transactions that Apple has to approve and disapprove on the App Store are huge. I think that what would make me happy is to know that if someone gets hit by the ban hammer, there is a documented process for saying, no, this is wrong. I want to talk, not through a third party, not through lawyers, but basically you can't, if you ban me and I say, I want to talk to you face to face, person to person, you know, you ask me questions, I ask you questions, and we figure out what happened. As long as someone has the right to do that, so that after the robots say that this developer has screwed up, after the humans who oversee the work of the robots have said this person has screwed up, there is a way for that person to say, I didn't screw up, you got it wrong, or B, I didn't realize that this thing that I was doing that seemed natural was wrong. Is there a way that I can assure you that my intentions were not those of evil?
Yeah, I mean, a smaller company wouldn't be a big deal, but this is the sole and only way to put an application on the most popular smartphone in the United States, maybe the world. It has to rise to a higher standard at some point than just, hey, it's a business, it's our business, we can do whatever we want. I call Google on the carpet for the same reasons. You know, once you become that powerful and that important, then you have to rise to a higher standard, I think.
I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. Go ahead, Andy.
I'll say quickly that from my point of view, the more important thing is that I know many developers for whom their livelihood is one app or two apps. It's not that they have 18 different interests and 9 different things are each graphing against their income. It's that they have a really beloved, well-made, well-supported, well-documented product. And if someone just simply pulls the plug on that revenue stream, they suddenly have nothing. So I don't think that it's less of a case of obligations on Apple's part, as there needs to be at least an outward sign that we appreciate that it's not as though we're taking away somebody's fart app and the 18 cents every quarter that we were sending to them for the sales of that fart app. For some time, it's a productivity app that a lot of our users count on, and that it will have huge, huge repercussions. At that level, you really do have to have a conversation in which a human talks to another human and asks questions gets responses for that to happen.
Yeah,
and there's just a couple of quick things. Like, one is, I spoke to a lot of people, as many people as I could, about this, and not a single person I spoke to did not sound, you know, whether it was other developers or Apple, did not sound personally devastated. Like, this is the last thing they want to have happen. They don't want any developer to ever feel disenfranchised. And if they could, that's the part that makes it so hard, is that if you take both of them at face value, and I believe we can, nobody wanted this to happen. Everybody wanted a good resolution to this, and a lot of people are deeply hurt that there wasn't a good resolution to this. But this is also not a unique situation. I mean, there have been accounts of things happening at the Google Google Play Store. Celebrities and models have had their Instagram accounts deleted. Facebook has removed things. This is a problem with the digital age now, where we have this virtual real estate and absolutely no real control over the platforms that we're using for all our businesses. And they are, in some cases, up to not just the whim of the platform, but the whim of the people, and sometimes very people with really special egos involved in key parts of those platforms, and who can make a spot decision and decide they not like you, or decide something is wrong when three other people in their branch would not decide it's wrong. And there goes your account, or there goes your app. And I think that's a larger problem that we have to solve as we become an increasingly digital economy.
All right. Well, I'm sure – I don't think we've heard the end of this one, but I don't know if there ever will be a resolution to it, but we'll keep you posted. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it is the time at the end of the show where we pick our favorite things, and let's start with Andy Iannacco's pick of the week.
I'm wearing the pick of the week. It's the Epic 2 Bluetooth earphones by JLab Audio. Since I'm reviewing the iPhone 7, I decided to spend a month not ever using plug-in headphones of any kind.
Wow.
And so I've had these for – so I decided to buy my first pair of Bluetooth headphones in about a year and a half, 2 years, so that I see what I've been missing by using the wired stuff. And I picked these because it has the features that I want. They're technically workout – they're sport earbuds. So I promise you that I don't wear them while – playing volleyball in a bikini
why the hell not? That's what I want to know.
Well, because I'll send you privately a picture of myself wearing spandex, and that'll answer everything. But what I did want is I wanted something that would replicate the way that I personally use earbuds. I don't have the big cans that you wear on the subway that has the shell over your ears. These are things that I roll up and I stick in my pocket or stick in a little pouch that I will have with me, and I just listen to them like when I'm traveling and when I'm on the buses and trains and stuff like that. So it's small and it's compact. Actually, I should take them off at this point. So if you want to say nasty things to me, by all means, because I will not be able to hear you because I'm using this for show audio. So it's really, really tiny. It's really, really compact. I have a big head, so it has a feature that I really, really need, which is the ability to – it has a long cord that connects the two items of them, and you can adjust them so that when you – they'll stay put. But traditionally, when I have the kinds that are kind of molded in, I can't lean forward without pulling the earbuds out of my thing. It has integrated, of course, volume and pause so that you can do Hey Shlomo and whatever Google is doing with that stuff too. It has the other feature that really attracted me to it was the fact that it has a 12-hour battery life, which is as long as I can really – that's about as long as it gets. The bummer that I had with previous Bluetooth headphones is that when I want to use – I can't be diligent about plugging them in every single night. I have to have some break away from the charging cable. And I find that I almost never am caught – I've never been caught unawares – because it's when you plug them in and turn them on, it will announce what the battery level is. And of course, it's Bluetooth 4, so you can see right in the menu bar of your mobile or your desktop device what the battery level is. Charges up really, really quickly. It comes with 8 different styles and sizes of the silicone earbuds, so you're going to have an awful fit for the first day or two, but that's your excuse for rotating through these different sets before you find the kind that you really, really like. I find they're quite comfortable. I find that they're very, very wearable. The only thing that I can really complain about them is that I won't hold this close to the camera, so you can't really see all the earwax and stuff. I have to use this kind because the other kinds are a little bit more comfortable.
The flanged kind.
But they're only suitable for like pop music. I listen to a lot of pop music and podcasts. I like to listen to a lot of classical and opera, and I find that I can only really get like the full range. I only really get that bass if I've got the kind that can really just put them like right into my ears. So they sound very, very good. As good as the $12 Amazon Basics headphones that I used to wear. But I think that my personal limit with these is about 2 hours. I haven't looked into having custom molds made, or I've been thinking about taking some of the better silicone plugs from other headphones I used to use, wired headphones, to see if I can adapt them. But they're perfectly comfortable for a couple hours if I want to wear them longer. They're easy to carry around. But the other thing that was important to me is that they do come with a case. So that, again, it has the same, I can still just stick them in a pocket usability. But the other thing that was important is that I just don't have $200 to spend on a pair of $12 Amazon Basics headphones. And these are $99.99. Let's round it up to $100. And so that's, to me, that's for as both a consumer, that's as much money as I want to spend for a device that I know is not as simple as copper wiring that goes to little sound inducers in molded plastic. But I still don't want to spend $200 for the noise cancellation. I don't want to spend $200 for not having a wire that goes between one ear and the other. But so after 2 weeks of wearing them, I've actually done a couple other shows on Twit with these on. I'm willing to say I'm willing to recommend them. These are really good $99 headphones. I haven't before I write about Bluetooth headphones in general. I do want to buy a pair of really crappy, like $23 no name Amazon. I don't mean Amazon brand. I mean that a name brand you've never heard before that gets delivered from Hong Kong, to see what the difference is. By the way, I should point something out. I did hesitate a little bit before buying them because it's one of those famous Amazon product reviews where it gets 3 stars, 3.5 stars, and it's because everybody who uses them is either giving it a 5-star review or a 1-star review. And most of the 1-star reviews are because they broke. They say, oh, they only last about 3 weeks, and then they broke, or they keep cutting out on the audio. There are two things to say about that, just to factor in if you're about to order them on Amazon and that gives you pause. These are IPX5 rated, which means that they are waterproof, or they're waterproof up to actual like gentle water jets. So they should be okay in the rain. They should be okay in sweat. However, there is, like, of course, a charging port, a micro USB charging port here. And if you don't click that all the way in, it is no longer waterproof. So I think that the people who've had them die are people who didn't have that seated properly, and then they sweated into them or it got rained on. I should also point out that, again, I'm not wearing these as exercise headphones. I'm wearing these as just regular earphones. So I have haven't had any problems with that. The second problem is things cutting out. I have had that was kind of an interesting experience. I carry my phone in my pocket, either chest pocket or, you know, a pants pocket. And, of course, it the signal has to pass through a lot of meat to get through to these things. On my Nexus 5X phone, which is a mid-quality phone, maybe every 2 or 3 minutes there'll be like a little click of it disconnected for a little bit, but I found it again. So I can't say there's no signal problems, but that's only when I'm outside and walking. When I'm actually just using it around the house, or whether I'm again on the train or the subway, I'm not having a problem. I find that using it with the iPhone 7, however, I'm having no problems whatsoever. So I think that disconnects can be largely a problem of, you will find out exactly how good the Bluetooth radios on your device are, because with my iPad, with this, I'm not having a problem. And the last thing to say about it is that you can connect it to, I think, I'm looking at the table here, it's not on the table, I think up to, you can pair it with multiple devices at the same time. So right now this is paired to my Mac, it's paired to my iPad, it's paired to the Apple's loaner phone. It's paired to my Nexus 5X. And so I can switch between them without having to repair. All I have to do is, the only thing that's annoying is that sometimes I have to, like when I was getting ready for the show, it automatically repairs to whatever device you paired it with, you connected to last with it, if that device is still in range. The fact that this phone was still like within range meant that I couldn't just go to my Mac and then just simply say connect to this. I had to disconnect from this first. But if this were upstairs or someplace else, it wouldn't care. The range is pretty good, by the way. I can walk. I have a wall between my office here and being in the kitchen and still be listening to what's going on. I will say that that's the one thing I really, really like about I will say that I've been missing out on the ability, when there's a 2 or 3 minute ad read during a show, to be able to walk away, go refill my water
that's
bottle,
nice.
Go
yeah.
check the mail, and hear where the commercial is. And when I hear Leo's upload, and so that's why we thank our
You fooled me every time. No, it's not. Isn't it nice being unwired? First of all, the AirPods are due any minute now, right? So those are going to be another competitor, I think, in that category. And aren't aren't we expecting a bunch of W1 headphones, based headphones from Beats and others?
One is that the Solo is already out. It's the X and the other ones that are, I think, still due.
So this is certainly, I mean, at that price, too, a reasonable alternative, at least in the interim. But ultimately, if you're going to go Bluetooth, you're probably going to go want to go W1, I would think. That's the new chip in the iPhone 7.
Yeah, it depends on. But I also have to say that I'm not very vain. Again, get a load of what my body looks like and how I'm dressed. I'm more comfortable with this sort of interface going on to the world than.
I know that little dribble, that icicle dribble. Yeah, I know.
It's like, and it's not even the dribble. It's that I kind of want to, as soon as I get my loaner pair to try out, I think that I will only feel good about it if I then 3D print a bunch of like hoops and like crosses, the things I can connect to it so it looks like I'm wearing an actual earring.
It's Galactica actual, Andy. You just got to own it.
I mean, I've had such bad experiences with wireless headphones, Bluetooth headphones, dropping out and losing pairing and stuff that I've just been dreading this. But I think this is ultimately the way to go.
Put computer chips in the headphones.
Yeah.
I'm glad that there are options for people. For me to buy it, $160 is too much for me to spend on a pair of headphones like that. It's also because I use so many different devices, the W chip isn't going to be as big an improvement for me as for other people. I'm just glad that there are alternatives. I wouldn't say that this is, oh my God, the scales have fallen from my eyes. My soul is stronger for the tears I have shed. I can't believe I rebuke the false devil, the false god of wired headphones. When my 30 days of experiment are over, I'm going to be using wired headphones when I'm going to enjoy using wired headphones. I think that I will still be very, very happy that on my Android phone, if I ever forget these, leave these at home because there's a charger attached, I will be happy that I still have a pair of $10 crappy wired headphones in my bag because there's a pair in every bag that I have. But I'm glad that there's been a lot of – if you have not checked out Bluetooth headphones since the last time you bought a set of Bluetooth headphones and were deeply, deeply, profoundly disappointed, you will find that Bluetooth 4.0 and modern design and modern battery life will make things a lot better than the last experience you had.
Good. Good to know. Renee, Richie, your pick.
So I have, I know this has been picked many, many times, but there's a reason to pick it again today, and that's OmniGraffle by the Omni Group. So in September, they announced this new model. They said that, you know, traditionally on Mac apps, when you sell them separately, when you sell them off the Mac App Store, you can do all these great things, like give people upgrade discounts, free copies if they just bought it. You could have different tiers of pricing, but you couldn't do this on the Mac App Store. And then the Omni Group being the Omni Group, you know, I imagine Ken Case or somebody said, or Tim Wood said, why can't we? And they sort of bucked the conventional wisdom in a way that Omni is so good at doing it. And they did it. So now I believe it's rolling out today, OmniGraffle 7. I couldn't get the link working in my App Store. It might be on the US App Store already. OmniGraffle 7, when you open it, it gives you this dialog box and you can choose to dismiss it and then you can read it in read-only mode and have an OmniGraffle reader if all you want to do is use OmniGraffle to, you know, distribute documents in your company. But you can choose to do an upgrade purchase. You can choose to unlock it if you just bought the previous version. You can choose different tiers of having it. And it's a one-time price. There's no subscriptions. But they, you know, darn it, they managed to figure out how to make the Mac App Store work like a traditional Mac software purchasing model. And I think it's terrific. I mean, the Mac App Store obviously has a cavalcade of issues that we could spend three more shows talking about. But this has been one of the longstanding ones. There was a lack of flexibility for developers. And I love that Omni Group, you know, a lot of developers have famously quit the Mac App Store and for very, very good reasons. But the Omni Group is like, they're going to figure it out. And I think that's just an amazing philosophy and an amazing accomplishment for them as a company. So if you haven't used OmniGraffle yet, it's a way for you to make all these very quick, very easy, very intuitive. I mean, you could spend a lot of time making absolutely beautiful documents. But to take what is in your head and get it into a usable form for other people, it is absolutely peerless. And now you can get it on the Mac App Store in the way that you've been buying it for years off the Mac App Store. And a lot of people really like getting it there because when you install a new Mac and you can just hit the Mac App Store and download all your apps, it's way easier than remembering and going to a bunch of websites and finding a bunch of license codes. So a lot of people, you know, still just want to be able to get it from the Mac App Store. And again, they just made it work. So kudos and thank you to the Omni Group.
Good. Maybe others will do this too.
I hope so. I mean, yeah. It's a fantastic experience.
Yeah. Nice. I have an anti-recommendation. In the past, I've recommended something from Seagate called Live, L-Y-V-E. It was hardware and software that allowed you to automatically back up all your photos from your all your devices, not just your phones, and it's not iOS specific, but iOS and Android, and your computers, Mac and PC, and collate them into a single device. It had a metadata syncing capability. Seagate offered it, and in fact, if you had an external drive from Seagate, in many cases it was Live compatible. You could use that hardware with the Live software. They're shutting the service down at the end of the year, and so in a way, this is also a cautionary tale because when you use a service like this, now Live doesn't back up your photos to their servers. So I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen if you bought, as I did, a Live device. Is it still going to work? I think it's not going to work, even though the hardware is still there. It needs the service to connect and copy the data over. So they're offering 6 months free of Amazon storage and stuff as a bridge. But it's really disappointing, and I think that. It just shows you when you rely on a service of some kind that you should be aware of the fact that it only works as long as that service continues. I thought Seagate was a big enough company to keep something like this around forever. It sold a lot of hard drives for them, I imagine. Anyway, I apologize for recommending a service that is now going away. And if you did take my recommendation and buy a Live device or use the Live service, you should start looking for an alternative because Live is dead, or about to, anyway. But we will be back. So yes. Thank you, everybody. It's great to see you. Rene Ritchie is at iMore.com. He does lots of podcasts there, writes a lot there. He's just a nonstop go-getting guy at the mobile? What are you?
Mobile Nations.
Mobile Nations editorial director? Yeah. Or
yes, sir.
He's the guy. And it's always great to thank you.
One of the people.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you have great people. It's iMore. It's wonderful. But there are other Mobile Nation products.
And we have Florence Ion now on Android Central.
That's right. Congratulations.
Yep. She's phenomenal.
Great score. I'm not hiring any more people so you can steal them. That's it. It's over.
It's great synergy, Leo. I mean, like, no, it's, Mac break,
that's exactly
that.
How I think of it. She is, of course, a regular on our Android show.
So Leo, are you suggesting that iMore is the Samsung of tech journalism?
Well, I don't know, man. I don't know. No, I'm thrilled. When you see great, talented journalists and you see them succeed, there's what better? You know, that's wonderful. I love seeing that. I do. And also love seeing you, Andy Iannacco, each and every week at about 11 a.m. Tuesday. It's great to see you. 2 p.m. your time, East Coast time.
So glad to have you back, Leo.
1800 UTC. Thanks for filling in for me, too.
Always fun. Renee and I had a lot of fun hosting the show.
That's nice. Yeah, I'll have to watch it. Also, thanks. Did you not do iOS today as well? I think you did.
Yes.
Thank you for doing that.
That was scheduled at the time. That's another show I wish I could do more often because it's nice to talk about iOS nice to talk about that all at once without having to talk about lawsuits, without having to talk about
actual
other news.
I agree. I really love that show. And Megan's great, too. Megan Maroney's fabulous.
Oh, Megan. Yeah. Any 5 minutes I can spend talking with Megan is worth another 10 minutes of my life.
I feel very lucky, yeah. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. As I mentioned, we do this show every Tuesday. I hope you'll stop by and watch us live, 1800 UTC. If you can't, though, don't worry. On-demand audio and video is available, as with all our shows. You can start at our website, twit.tv/MBW for Mac Break Weekly. All the old episodes are there as well as every new episode. But you can also see from there, you can subscribe on iTunes. We're on Google Music. We're on Stitcher and Slacker. Everywhere you can get podcasts. And do subscribe because you don't want to miss an episode. We have had a wonderful studio audience. It was nice to have you. If you'd like to join us in the studio, all you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make sure we have a seat out for you. And a show for you to watch. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Now I'm afraid to say it is time to get back to work because break time is over.